It's quite an ambitious project, and we're excited to see it realised here. So I'll pass it over to you, Hannah.
Thanks. I'm not actually really sure how I'm going to talk about this work, because I'm sure I'll talk a lot about it, but I don't really know how to start, just because the work, this particular body of work, sort of feels a little bit like it's happened to me, rather than me sort of making, you know, having an end goal and deciding exactly what I was going to do. I had an idea about what I wanted to do in here, but in terms of the practice of painting on velvet and painting nebula, that has all sort of been a process of weird sort of coincidences and chance meetings and all sorts of odd things which have directed the practice in really sort of happy ways. So it sort of feels a little bit to me like I only own about half of this, if you know what I mean, and the other half sort of just feels like it's just this weird thing that's happened, which is a really strange position to be in. My previous practice was with my ex-husband, and we had a collaborative practice, and it's been really interesting moving from that and realising that I'm actually collaborating with materials more than I ever was before. We used to do a lot of planning, and there was no sort of room for the materials to do what they did, but now I'm really sort of immersed in this sort of position where I actually feel like the work's telling me what to do, which is a really strange and spooky way to talk about it, but it's quite exciting in terms of sort of realizing that I still have this kind of weird collaboration arrangement where I don't have sort of complete control, but it's doing the same things as the collaborative practice used to, and that it's sort of surprising me and keeping me really interested in what's happening. So it's been happy developments. We originally had this idea. I wanted to do like a red room. Do people know what I mean? Or from, you know, the red room from Twin Peaks, where the little dwarf guy is, and they go in, and it's that red curtains, and they've got like a checkerboard floor. And originally, when I talked to Hope about it, I asked her for Axminster carpet, which is that really, really intense. It's made in Christchurch, eh? Is it?
I'm not sure.
It's made in New Zealand, but really intensely patterned carpet from sort of the 70s, and it's really gone out of vogue. But I thought that would do that kind of. There's a particular pattern called Rickerton, which has a whole lot of swirls on it, that I thought might be quite a bizarre. Like, I kind of wanted you to sort of walk into it, almost like you're walking into a void. But we, so Hope was amazing. She's been on Trade Me for the last month trying to find some particular, very specific Axminster carpet that I wanted. And we ended up buying some yesterday, which was not quite the right pattern. And we got it in here, and I suddenly realised, I think this is the thing that happens when you're making work, you suddenly realise that the work's done something else anyway, that the work was more monumental without the carpet, and putting the carpet in somehow took away from where it was at. So then I took it out, and actually I'm kind of happy with the decision where it is at. I think sometimes you just sort of have to like listen and go, okay, that was the original concept, but possibly what's happening here is okay, and probably what was supposed to happen. I've got this quite airy fairy way of talking about work now. Now that I'm almost 20 years out of art school, I kind of have sort of done this full rotation and gone from talking kind of quite sort of conceptually about work to about a lot more about what it actually feels like to make work, and a lot more about that kind of weird sort of spiritual thing that happens that you're not supposed to talk about at art school. But actually I'm kind of okay, because it's sort of like, well, really, this is what's happening to me, so.
What do they know there anyway?
What do they know? We're not supposed to talk about that stuff, but it's really, and you kind of are kind of encouraged away from it. And it's, on some levels, I sort of understand that, because it's good to have that sort of academic rigor. But on another level, it doesn't necessarily encourage you to make work in a sort of intuitive way.
Yeah.
So I think recently I've started teaching drawing quite a bit as well, and a lot of actually working out, talking about what's going on, it's not necessarily academic or intellectual. It's something else. It's much more sort of responsive. So, please interrupt with questions.
Do you have a plan in your head
what
that you make before you start making this work, or does it evolve once?
I have an image that I'm working from. So this is a specific nebula. This is Westerland 2, which is in the Milky Way galaxy. It's only about 33 light years away, so it's relatively close. it's pretty close. But Hubble took an amazing image of it for their anniversary last year. And just in terms of the format of the room, I was quite excited about it, and I was really excited about the way that it changed colour as it went around the room as well. So I made up a marquette and checked that it was going to work, like spatially, and then I worked from an image. But there's stuff that happens because I'm working with dyes, and I'm a bit of a novice working with dyes. I've only been working with them for a couple of years. There's stuff that happens when you start dyeing, and the dye just goes off in a different direction. That I kind of have to sort of push and pull a little bit with the acrylics, but kind of live with quite a lot of it as well. I'm getting more control over time, but I'm kind of, that's the thing that I was saying about sort of working with the materials, is that sometimes there's more interesting things that happen than you anticipate. Like, I really like up there where it's got that sort of fleck. That was all happened in the dye and by accident, but I wouldn't touch it.
So the granules of the dirt, is it kind of
It was actually the spray bottles just started misfunctioning.
Okay.
So I said, whoop!
Yeah.
And then it had gone over like that. So it kind of, I just decided to leave it. But there's a level of control.
So you spray the dye on, do you?
I spray and brush. It's a combination.
Brush.
Yeah.
So do you put this up against something here?
I work on the garage floor. And I can only fit 3 drops at a time. So I hadn't actually seen the whole work
together
until yesterday. Or the day before.
Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, which is terrifying because I didn't know what was gonna happen on the seams. I had an idea, like I'd actually sort of dye to about here, which is the middle of one drop, and then I'd do that half of the drop, and then I'd do the next 2 drops and then leave it about halfway there. So the joins are actually here, but then in the rinsing and stuff, sometimes things move around and you discover that you're a little bit out. But it's a bit, I mean, there's a little bit of push and pull. I don't mind that it shifts. So,
well, it shifts up there.
It shifts up there, and it shifts when you walk around it as well, because half of the paint is sitting on top of the velvet, and then the velvet is dyed deep inside. So if you look at it from the side, it's a lot hotter and a lot brighter than it is if you look at it directly. Which I really like as well. I was quite excited when that sort of started happening.
It was magical and meditative coming into the opening last night, and then we went through to Nova's work and the music and then the music.
The music's interesting,
eh? It was a great combination of you both, I felt.
It's quite strange because when I thought about the show originally, I thought there would be a soundtrack. I wrote that in the original one,
yeah.
And I had this idea that it would be something from the past, and it would sort of sound out like it was being played in a distance, like possibly from the radio. And then I totally forgot about it and started working on the work, and then I got sort of completely immersed in that. And then just yesterday when the sound work came on, I was like, oh, that's right. So it's okay. I'm quite happy, and I'm actually quite happy with it, that you can hear outside, what's happening outside as well. That sort of dislocation of space is quite sort of nice. You're sort of present, but you're not really where you think you are as well. So it's kind of, that's one of those things that sort of, they have these ideas and then you forget them as you go, I reckon. Which is, yeah.
Do you think you'll keep working with fabric, which is more fluid than the earlier works you did
that were fixed and stretched? This works at the scale, and I like that it moves. It moves really, really easily, so that the crystals are flashing and stuff, which is really nice. Originally I thought I was going to be pinning the bottom edge as well, so that it would be quite sort of
rigid. Yeah, but it, but mostly the curtain thing was because to get stretches in here and make them fit and make them butt up to each other, I just thought, because you can't tell whether the building's square even if you put the stretches in, it would have just been, it would have been impossible. So that was, it was really about that. But actually, since I started working with I Love, that I turned up with this in the front seat of my car. And it was so easy. I could actually carry the whole work in my arms up the stairs and be able to work at this scale. That's really exciting. And just being, and just knowing that I can work at this scale, because I think as soon as I started working on the Velvet, I was like, I want to do this big, like really big, and see what happens. So, and it's part of it is to do with the thing that, that you move past it when you're viewing it, and it changes as you view it. Whereas if you, the smaller works, when you move around the room, they shift, but there's not sort of that, there's not that sort of like forgetting what you've just seen almost as you're moving through it, like the kind of, the way that it changes in your head. So, yeah, and I'm really excited about working big, and it feels really, it feels like the right point in my career to start getting really ambitious as well. I've just, I don't know, there's something about scale and about just feeling like you're ready for it as well. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm just going to...
How long is the garage then, Chris? It might be in it.
The garage, it's a double garage. Yeah, it's a double garage, and it's, I can get a drop in, so I could get the whole... Actually, it was square. It was pretty much square, so it's basically that big. I'm going to need a bigger space if I go. I am. And actually, I did think when I'd done this, ideally I would have actually been able to view it before I hung it. And yeah, I mean, maybe I'd look at renting a space next time. But the die makes a mess. It's so messy. I covered the floor with plastic, but you just get it everywhere. So it's sort of, I don't know, there's some issues. And I have to rinse them out in the shower, because that's the only place that is big enough to, just so get in the shower
so
with them.
So you have to rinse it after you've
dyed
it?
After you've dyed it, yeah, you have to rinse them out. Because there's a lot of extra dye that's sitting in the fabric. You have to kind of remove all the extra dye.
Does that change the look of it too?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah. Sometimes, not as much as you'd expect, but some colours tend to kind of like move in the when you're removing the dye, and certainly when you're drying as well. They, if you haven't rinsed it properly, they sort of sag. So, I think if I left the dye in, it would probably actually damage the velvet as well, because it's got it's quite what's the word, alkaline. Yeah, it would probably kill the fibres over time, so yeah, you've got to sort of give it a good clean.
Is it silk velvet?
Yeah, the backing's silk, so all silk velvet is a silk backing with rayon, which is also natural fibre, but sort of a bit more processed. And it's actually amazing. I watched a video about them making it, and they make it sandwiched. Mm. So it's two sheets of velvet at the same time with the pile is going between them. And then they just cut through, they just cut them into two pieces. And they only cut it once. So just the technology is amazing to get that kind of, that exact, they've been doing it for forever as well. It's a really quite incredible process. Yeah, so I'm kind of, I don't know, it's been really interesting. There's a really famous velvet painter who when I started working with it, I was like, I don't know how you do this, because the paint just goes straight into the velvet and sticks, and you end up with these big lumps. And there's this really amazing velvet painter who you would have seen his images from, but he was a bit of a... not a particularly nice guy, and he said he was never going to tell anyone his secrets, and he died not telling anyone his secrets. But I found a photo of him sitting next to his easel online, and I realised that all of his brushes were flat. And the minute I switched to flat brushes, that didn't happen anymore. And I think that's part of, I mean, it's just sort of like, oh my, you know, like a little chance thing suddenly made it kind of possible. Which is really good. And I had another experience too, where I was working on the black velvet, and I met by chance a woman who's a friend of a friend, came to the studio to look at what I'd been doing, and she was like, she had worked on The Hobbit in the textiles department, and she looked at them and she said, why are you working on black? And I was like, well, it's painting on black velvet. And she was like, for The Hobbit, every single piece of fabric that came through the studio was white to start, even the black things. They dyed everything. She said, you need to start with dye and then you'll be able to get the light in, because there's only so much whiteness you can add. And I was sort of a little bit disappointed that the real hot spots weren't really hot.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I'd had that conversation, it was like, oh, this is easy.
So is this white velvet?
This is white velvet, yeah. White velvet and a bit of dye and a bit of acrylic paint as well, yeah, pretty much.
Oh, so you've got acrylic paint on here as well?
Yes, yeah. That's the bit that shifts, so if you're looking at it from the angle, it's quite hot. It means that I can kind of push around the dye a little bit and kind of define some edges that I think need defining, so yeah, it's kind of a process.
And velvet is quite tricky to sew because of the depth to it. So did you have to like shave the edges to sew?
No, I double side taped them.
Double side tape.
Yeah.
Yes.
Double side tape, because pins don't work because it goes roof, roof, when you've got it in the sewing machine. So I double side taped them, and then I sewed right next to the tape.
Okay.
And then I removed the double side tape. So they've got no double side tape on them, but it just works better than pins.
Yeah.
That's the secret. Yeah.
Oh.
There you go.
You're not like that guy. I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
So how come you chose this image? Was it
It was to do with the format and kind of to do with. I like that there was this sort of quite a lot of action going around the middle of the painting and then void at the bottom and at the top, so that you like to view it would sort of feel like you were, well, I kind of thought you'd feel like you're sort of in the middle of the image and it was sort of floating. There's not a whole lot of nebula that are photographed that way, because quite often they're quite circular, because they'll be activated by some really bright stars and so it'll catch everything around it. But this one happens to have quite a lot of dust and crap along the bottom, and then there's a really bright group of really young stars that are, like, some of the biggest ones in our galaxy actually are actually lighting this one here.
Yeah.
So it just, in terms of the format, worked. And colours, I like the colour. I look at a lot of them, and I think I saw this one and I was just like, yeah, that's the right one for this.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any systematic approach to the placement of the stars? Like, were you working from the image? Or?
I actually don't do the placement of the stars. I've got a friend, no, I do some of them. I've got a friend who's worked with me on all of the shows, and she does, she's amazing. She was working from the image as well, but we've kind of had quite a few conversations about how to go about putting them down. Like, you're sort of looking for not making patterns and not making certain spacings and making it random, but also clusters. And so we've had lots of conversations, and she knows now what colours I would put where, because they're all different colours as well and different sizes. But she actually helps me. There's 1,500 stars in this one. So I was just running out of time. it does take a little while, and she just comes to the studio and talks and we gossip and she sticks to us, yeah, which is really nice.
Do you acknowledge her in the write-up, or do you...
I forgot to. I usually do.
Yeah.
She's not here, is she? Rebecca? No, she's maybe not. I don't think she was going to come. Yeah, I do. I acknowledged her in the sofa show, and she hadn't worked on that one. A little bit like, yeah. But yeah, she should have gotten an acknowledgement in the thing that I didn't do. I felt awful as soon as I realised that it had been printed and I hadn't done it. But yeah, she should get full credit, because she's definitely... I don't know whether it would be possible without, I mean, just in terms of my sanity as well.
Yeah, totally.
Being like, oh, I don't know whether I can do all of these stars on my own. Yeah.
Could you tell us about the relationship between your drawing practice and this painting practice?
Oh,
or,
my God,
or,
that's a really hard question.
Or not, is the case, maybe, you know?
I don't know the relationship yet.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for that to reveal itself. And I'm sure it will at some stage. There's some parts of it that are similar in that I'm sort of, in both cases, I'm letting the initial wash do what it does. And then I'm finding the image. This one I'm working from an image. In the case of the drawing practice, I'm finding, I don't know what the image is, and I'm finding it in the wash, which is even more intense. It's kind of, yeah, it's, I mean, there's a sort of slight, I think there's relationships, and I mean, there's sort of that thing about, I think ultimately I'm sort of interested in the idea that that nature has ulterior motives and is has this kind of darkness or this sort of monstrosity, sort of these sort of weird sort of forces behind it. That's my kind of premise for working on both of them in some ways. But I think the drawings one, definitely with the mice, it's more finding the human interaction with that. Whereas this is more, oh, I don't know, just maybe facing those things. So it's sort of, they're kind of related, but not, in some ways they come from exactly the same place, because I was working on these drawings of volcanic eruptions, looking for sort of monsters in the clouds and stuff, before I started working on any of that stuff. So it's sort of, there's sort of an element of sort of found drawing, and sort of letting things tell me what to do. But I think the fact that the mice have come in is to do with lots and lots of life drawing. I've been, because I'm teaching life drawing and do it twice a week, and they just sort of came out. And they were mice, they weren't people, but probably if they were people, it probably would have been a bit full on.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah. We share a lot of the DNA.
I don't know, the mice are a really strange one. I haven't really talked about them yet, but they...
Maybe next time.
Yeah, maybe next time. They're
Where
a really...
They? Where are they?
The mice? If people haven't seen it, for the Parkin Prize I did a massive drawing, which is basically a big ink wash, and then I found... Then I started working into the ink wash and defining what was in there, and the kind of marks that were in there suggested all these mice that were being sort of annihilated in different ways by the ink wash. They're quite full on. And then I've done another quite big drawing for Sofa, which was 7 metres long and 1.5 metres high, same thing, where I sort of just took them through this kind of torturous... In some ways, I was sort of thinking about earthquakes and things. So there's a lot of tumbling, mice falling and getting horrible things happening to them. They came initially also from a drawing that I'd had in my workbooks for years and years and years, and I didn't know what I was going to do with, which was a drawing of the Battle of the Mice and the Frogs by Kaiosai. And I was obsessed with the image, but I didn't know what it meant. So in some ways, when I started, the very first one I did was an ink wash, and it was the Battle of the Mice and the Frogs, but it was quite small. But that's sort of become epic as well, because it's sort of...
And I see you were doing something at the Graduate Art Gallery on the 27th of May or something.
On the 27th of May, I'm taking a drawing workshop for Francis Hugh Pritchard's show. So I haven't quite worked out for that yet, but I'll do something. We're not allowed any kind of drawing implements in the space. Not officially. You're not supposed to take anything in more than a pencil. So I've got to have a think about that. Although I've sent students in there with Sharpies before without knowing, so yeah, we'll see. Yeah, but that's not my practice, it's more just to do with Francis's work. Yeah.
And the audience will be drawing,
yeah, everybody will be drawing.
Not
yeah, come and draw. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, how are we going for time?
Just about 1:30.
So you're working on anything at the moment?
I've just finished this.
Yeah, I guess that's interesting, like, where to next?
Where to next? I'm in conversation at the moment about doing something for SCAPE at Canterbury University. I mean, not university, at the museum, which I'm really excited about. I'd love to do something in the museum spaces. So I don't know what that's going to be yet, but that will be in October, which gives me a little bit of a break and a chance to kind of catch up on other things. But I'm working constantly anyway, doing smaller drawings and sort of thinking, and I'll be keeping on doing these as well, but at a smaller scale where it fits in my studio. Sort of in the meantime, I actually have no stock room, and I'm thinking I need to kind of build up a bit of a backlog, because my dealer and didn't even keeps taking stuff. So I've got people keep asking for things, and I'm like, I don't have anything. So actually, I need to get a bit of a body of work behind me as well. That's the next thing. Yeah. We'll see. Probably bigger.
In a big warehouse.
In a big warehouse. I need to get a big warehouse.
How big do they make velvet? Like, assuming that you might continue on velvet, like, how big do they produce?
The rolls?
Yeah, like, because you'd be limited by
the length. Oh, the width is only 150.
Okay.
You might be able to buy it wider, but it wouldn't be silk velvet, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
I think, like, the stuff that they use in theatres is not silk velvet, it's something else.
Okay.
But that would probably come in much wider.
Yeah, true.
But I kind of...
So you'd always have to sew it at some point.
I'd have to, unless I did one really long one, which was a whole roll, which would be probably, could be maybe 35 metres long, but only 1.5 metres wide.
True.
So, yeah. Yeah, there's probably always going to be seams, but they seem to hide quite well. And I actually like that the velvet marks, and that there's sort of imperfections and things are changing, and that it's going to age and get dusty and get oily and all of that sort of, like, I think these will actually age quite well. They'll get disgusting probably after a while, but you can vacuum them. Yeah, so...
Oh, that's cool. Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you.
What we might do, because we've got 15 minutes before Nova Paul's talk starts, is I'll turn the sound work down on Nova's show, so if no one's heard that, they can hear it now, but also if people outside want to come in and see Hannah and talk to Hannah and have a look at the work, so we'll reconvene down in the backspace. Thank you, Hannah.
Yeah, thanks.